Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the University of Iowa School of Social Work, offering the opportunity to earn a master's degree from anywhere in Iowa, including an all-online MSW program. Information at socialwork.uiowa.edu.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's been over a month since the derecho struck Iowa on August 10th, but many Iowans are living with temporary fixes while they wait for a roofing crew or someone to work on the siding. We'll talk about those temporary fixes and some of the dangers you might encounter while doing some DIY work on your damaged home. And, of course, we'll also answer your questions. Our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally, is here today. Hello, Bill.
Hey, good morning, Charity. How you doing?
Good. Thank you for being here. I hope you're doing well.
I am. I just finished putting a steel roof on a cabin, and I'm feeling really good to be down on the ground.
Nice. Well, speaking of roofs, let's start up high, because if you drive around a lot of places in Iowa where the storm damage was really bad, you see that telltale blue of the tarps keeping people safe right now. And of course, roofing crews are taking a long time to get to all of the damage. And we had a lot of leaky roofs during our week-long rainstorm just a couple of weeks ago. So if you have a temporary patch on your roof, what do you need to be thinking about, Bill?
Well, you know, one of the things you have to keep checking on is these tarps. You know, in many cases, you know, they're pretty good at holding rain out for a while. But when we get some even a little bit of rain along with, some wind, the attachments to the tarp start to wear out. And so in many cases, you know, after maybe a couple of weeks, you may even have to think about replacing the tarp that you have up there, because they tend to tear. And then when we get more rain, wherever they tear, it allows more wind and rain to get in to that same spot that you're trying to keep dry. And we kind of think that, you know, that tarp's going to hold everything out. And it really doesn't. That water will pool on the tarps a lot of times where they might sag. And, you know, they tend to have small rips in them from, you know, setting on top of the roof with a little bit of wind. It'll wear a small hole. And then by the time, you know, you take it off, maybe even after 2 or 3 weeks, you know, you hold it up to the sun and you can see that this thing is just a big perforated screen, basically. And one other thing about the tarps is we throw them up real fast, and we don't take in consideration maybe where the tarp is taking the water that does come down. It's not in the same shape as the roof that you have a lot of times. And it'll, when we tie them off, we'll angle maybe a corner in one direction. All that water may end up going someplace else on the house and causing damage that's even unseen. And that's kind of a, you know, we have this, I guess, a little safety factor on our head. When we see the tarp, we think that it's going to hold all the rainwater out. In many cases, it doesn't. And so we do have to keep checking it, lifting it up, maybe looking up in the attic and making sure that it's actually doing its job.
Now, if you did have a leaky patch when we did have all of that rain, what are some of the things that you need to keep in mind in hopes that you're not going to develop mold problems or more water damage?
Yeah, that's, you know, the first thing we need to do is, you know, look up in the attic normally. And, you know, you can see if you have insulation in the attic. A lot, most people have like a blown insulation, and on fairly newer homes or even remodeled homes, older homes, they've blown, say, fiberglass or cellulose in. And after a rain, you really, you know, the roof deck will, that you're, you know, you're looking up at the bottom of the roof. A lot of times that will dry fairly fast because the sun will heat the roof up and the wood will dry, but then you can't see where the leaks were. But if you look at the top of the insulation, you can see these little hard spots or dark colored spots or even dimples that go down into the insulation if it's a blown type of insulation, and that will indicate where water has been. And even on sometimes on a fiberglass bat, you can see a discoloration on top of the insulation. Now, what's scary about that is the water goes right past it a lot of times on fiberglass, but it'll soak up into the cellulose. You know, it's just recycled newspaper and cardboard, and it'll soak into it, turn it in almost like into, you know, if somebody's gone fishing, that bus bedding that you put night crawlers in, you know, to keep them alive for a long time. it'll get soaked and it'll stay soaked, and it'll, anything that it's touching, like say the back of drywall, which is a paper, you know, the, of the ceiling, if it gets down and then sits on the ceiling, it can start to soak up the gypsum in that, soften it. The ceiling can come down in some cases because the cellulose gets real heavy when it's wet. It can also keep the wood wet or damp wherever that water's hit. And you can start getting some mold issues. So you want to, if you don't personally go up there, have someone else go in the attic and very carefully be careful where you step, you know, so you don't step on wiring, you don't step on ductwork, anything like that. And, you know, take a camera with you with a flash. And because what happens a lot of times is with that flash, it actually kind of illuminates some things that you can't see even with a flashlight. So just take a ton of pictures with that flash, and you'll be able to spot these different colors. But a lot of times when we have this driving rain like this, water will come up or wind will come up through the overhangs of your roof, through that ventilation area. And a lot of times it'll push the insulation actually that is over against where the roof and the wall meet. In many cases, it'll blow that insulation back. It's called cavitation. And I've been in attics where there's no insulation for 10 feet. And because it blows it back, well, when it does that, if it's raining at the same time, well, then rain comes in and then soaks the drywall again. And you'll see it on the bottom of that sheeting of the roof. You'll see that maybe some discoloration in many cases too, that if it doesn't dry out, you'll see the darkening. You'll see sometimes even a greenish color on it. That's when you need to, you know, have somebody, you know, come and take a look at it, a professional. But when you're doing all this, be sure and wear, you know, basically the same mask, maybe better than what we're using for COVID right now. And if you have the, like a zonalite insulation, it's just laden with asbestos. You don't even want to be up there. If you can download pictures off the internet on what it looks like, you shouldn't.
Okay, I was just
going to
ask that. If how do I know if my insulation has asbestos and is dangerous because it's been locked away? It's something that I never thought I was going to look at.
Right. Yeah. Just, you know, before you go in the attic, just Google it and see what it looks like. And a lot of times it's kind of a cube, and maybe the size, you know, like the small marshmallows that, you know, we used to, you know, just pop for fun, about that size. And some of the older vermiculite insulation that has asbestos in it, it has a kind of a shiny reflective surface on it, like a mica. That you can see. So if you're up in the attic and it isn't like fiberglass bats or blown fiberglass, which is, you know, just strings of fiberglass, or cellulose, which is gray and recycled newspaper and cardboard, it might possibly be, you know, the zonalite, but it's going to be in an older home. It's going to be something, you know, from the 50s and 40s and on older, that it might still be in there. And there is a fund that if you decide to have that taken out, it'll help reimburse the cost, because the Zonalite Trust Fund is available to be able to get that out of people's homes, because it is such an issue.
So, of course, it's been about a month, a little over a month, since the derecho struck. A lot of people have had insurance adjusters out to look at their homes. It's been an incredibly busy time for that. Are you concerned that there could be damage lurking that we missed in the aftermath of the storm?
Yeah, you know, I think people learned a lot. Remember, I think it was 2011 when we had that straight line wind in northeast Iowa that was over 100 miles an hour.
Yeah, yeah.
We learned so much from that when it's coming from one direction and it's a wind like that, we had people have flooring in the middle of their house pop up because the wind went through where the siding and the floor met and actually went in that seam between the carpet and the floor it was sitting on, and it was lifting the carpet up. I mean, it's so insidious that wind hits the house and it can wrinkle flashings that are meant to hold water out later on, you know, that's behind siding and behind roofs that can wrinkle them, open them up. And you don't see that until you go up and actually inspect it. And one of the scariest ones is people, the older homes that have those taller chimneys. And, you know, they're just pretty much held up by gravity. And when you get a straight line wind like that, it may have tilted it slightly. And the last thing you ever want to do is lean a ladder. I mean, I'm a moron now, but I was really a big one when I was younger. And I leaned a ladder up against a chimney when I was working on a roof. And I physically felt that thing move about an inch or two inches. So I was quick down the ladder. So, you know, the wind will do things that you don't even see. So if you have like vinyl or steel siding, they're very, you know, you can buy a little tool to pull them apart so you can pull the siding, you know, some sections off or lift up the bottom and look around windows and doors and make sure that whatever the weather stripping and the flashings that were installed are still there and still in good shape. And then you can also see if you've had some water damage behind the siding, especially houses built in the 60s and 70s. We didn't wrap the outside of the house with a weather-resistive barrier before we put the siding on. And there may be just bare plywood or oriented strand board sheeting. And we can see if any water may have gotten behind there and caused some damage. And if it's gotten behind some flashing around the windows, it may have softened the materials up and you may have to pull siding off and do some reconstructive work. But it mostly shows up in the attic because of that wind that blows over the top of a roof. It causes a kind of a Venturi effect, and it will just kind of cause a lift on the backside a lot of times of the roof, and it'll pull the shingles up, and then they go back down, and they may look fine from the ground, and they may just look perfectly fine, but in some cases they will pull the shingles up, and then the nail kind of comes up with it a little bit, and then the shingles go back down, and now the nails are above the shingle slightly. And then you can get leaks down the road that you may not have right now. Yes. And then they also will kind of push the shingles up a little bit. And so when there's any wind, the water can
all
go
right
underneath the shingles.
Bill, we're
going
to have to
holes
take a break. We'll be back in just a moment with our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally, is here today, and he is ready and willing to answer your questions. You can give us a call at 866-780-9100, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And again, we've been talking about some of the difficult problems that may remain after the derecho that struck in August, but you can ask questions about anything you're working on with your home. Again, 866-780-9100. And Matt is up first in Mount Vernon. Hi, Matt.
Hi, Charity. How are you?
Good. What's your question?
We're trying to replace a bunch of windows in our old house. House is like 1905, and the windows are just fairly unusable, a lot of them. We've got some pricing from like the Pella windows, and it's just really steep. And I just didn't know if he has any ideas about different ways to go for something like that, or that's just how much things like that cost.
All right. There is a lot of sticker shock there, Bill.
Well, you know, there is a lot of difference in cost in these windows. You know, there's kind of that range of you know, the cheap vinyl windows for replacements. Yeah. And by cheap, I just mean low cost, because some of the vinyl mm-hmm. windows are very well made. This boy, you really got to do a lot of research on this, but. What we've seen a lot for maybe jumping up a little bit in some of the projects we do with the state, that it's fiberglass windows are being pushed as you know, a good step up from, say, a vinyl. And
okay.
Some companies have, you know, kind of a fiberglass, like a Fibrex, one of the companies calls it that. And then, you know, you get into the wood windows, and then you get into the wood with aluminum over or steel over the outside of that. There's such a huge difference on cost and quality. Now, you want to kind of keep the, you know, kind of that look of the same window on your house, though, right? I mean,
yeah,
the same type of window.
The wood inside. Yeah, the wood inside is really beautiful, old stained wood that's original to the house. So we just really want to make sure it looks like that. We got a couple 15 years ago for the bedroom, and they were great. But looking at getting six or eight of them for the house now, it's probably three times the price it was then.
I tell you what, right now, I was working on a project, it was 3 weeks ago, and I was surprised that this architect said that he has to hold off on his project because they were shooting in prices of $75 for a sheet of plywood. A couple of the articles I was reading, the materials have gone up 160%. Now, they're supposed to be coming down now, but excuse me, it kind of depends on what materials you're looking at, because I noticed that foam prices are pretty cheap, you know, sheets of foam. You know, you may be thinking, you know, maybe I ought to wait till the price goes down. Check with different manufacturers. But there's like if you go back and look at Fine Home Building magazine, that's a really good magazine, or Journal of Light Construction. They've done a lot of comparisons on windows, especially retrofits like you're doing. Green Building Advisor is another one where they've gone and looked at, you know, all those ranges and what you get for the dollar. You know, in some cases you're paying for the name. Also really look at, you know, what kind of warranty they offer, and then who's putting them in. And the first thing I would ask is, do you actually follow the directions of the manufacturer for installing these windows? We see a lot of failures, especially in the older homes, where they will come in and, hey, you know, we'll give you a whole house package, you know, and we'll give you free installation. Okay, that's a big red flag to me.
Because
do it right, especially in your older home. It takes a lot to make them, you know, weather tight. So
sure.
In some cases, people have gone, if the windows still operate, they've gone with a high-performance storm window instead of replacing them.
And then do you think that is, like you mentioned earlier, do you think it's better to wait a little while with all the derecho construction in the area and just wait for prices that they might go down in 6 months?
I would, because everybody's so busy right now. Your job wouldn't be a big one, you know, but me personally, I would wait. I know up here in the Fort Dodge area, we're having to wait on our roofs getting done till next spring because everybody's so busy. And so I've noticed the price is pretty high if you want to have something done. Just the way the market is, you know.
Yeah. He told us, this is the same windows we got in one part of the house years ago, but it was eight windows for $11,000. And that's just they are the nicest windows they make. They're beautiful wood. You know, they're lovely windows for sure, but it was a little bit.
You may want to, you know,
shock.
Do a little more shopping.
Okay.
Yeah. That's a shock. But I'm from the world where I'm so doggone old. I think, hey, a window over $100 is too much money. You know, when you get old. So
there should be a calculator that we use that takes our age into account when we look at prices. But still.
Adjustment ratio. You're right.
Big investment. Matt, thank you so much for your call. 866-780-9100 is the number for you to call with your questions. Here's an email question from Kurt. What are the advantages of using latex versus oil-based paint for painting the exterior of my house?
You know, that's kind of a time-worn question, because there's another thing. You get 50 painters in a room and it's going to be, a bloodbath. The latex paints, and I'm just going by what, you know, I'm not a painter, so I'm just going by what some friends of mine that a couple of them are house painters, you know, I asked them, and they said, you know, the latexes now have evolved so much. They're not like the stuff we had in the 70s and 80s. And, you know, a lot of them like the latex and a lot of it is because of the cleanup issue, and that's and the speed issue of that it dries. But you'll get, you know, a lot of the old timers that still want to have a oil based, you know, primer, and they may put an oil base over the top or put a you know, a latex over the top of that. Every manufacturer, you know, has their own specific type of blend and what the base is. And so I think most of the time it's the prep that's more important than the product of getting that wood clean and getting, you know, any residue, oils, anything that's in the way of getting either oil or latex to adhere to the base. I think we need to look at that a little bit more, because it doesn't matter if it's latex or oil. If that wood is not going to retain or adhere to what you're putting on it, because there's still some dirt, there's residue, there's garbage, because that's the ugly part of painting, is all the prep work. And so that's what I'd be more concerned about, and just pick a good major brand, you know, like Iowa Paint or, you know, all the big names, and then take a piece of wood in and make sure and ask that paint person, what do you recommend? Because you're the one I'm going to be coming and chewing on if it peels off. We got to remember, too, on older homes, you know, we still have homes that were built, like, say, in the 70s, where moisture vapor goes through the walls, hits the paint, and then peels it off in big chunks. That has nothing to do with the paint or the painter. It's just that there's moisture in the wall going out, and it'll flake it off. So, you know, that's a good conversation to have with your supplier. But make sure that whoever's putting it on does the prep work.
All right. So no easy answer there, but.
No, that was pretty political, wasn't it? I thought I did pretty good on that, not picking one there. You know, election season, I'll just kind of waffle a little bit.
Yeah, that's the most controversial issue right now, Bill. All right, let's back. Let's go back to the phones. AJ's on the line in Des Moines. Hi, AJ.
Yeah, hi, hi. I'm a pretty old guy, so please bear with me. I have a problem because we had a metal roof put on in place of the shingles or whatever they're called, and because there was a crack in the thing that was holding it up. So we put something lighter in its metal roof. And now it's over about a year now that we have that, and the problem is that the people that put the roof up, there's water coming through onto the ceiling in multiple areas of the building. This is a one-story building. So there are many areas on the ceiling where the water's coming through. I had some, they sent me the guy that, a guy that is apparently new to that company, and he walked around, he took a whole bunch of pictures, and that's the extent of it, and nobody's bothering to do anything, call or anything else. This is, I think, the third time that somebody came over to take pictures, but that's the extent of the thing. It's still leaking over the time of at least 3 months now, over a time of 3 months that somebody was here and taking pictures, and that was the first and last thing that I ever heard from them.
Do you have any of the original paperwork from them?
Yes, we do have the original paperwork that they wrote, but there's nothing I can do about it. I mean, the water still comes through the roof. My wife and myself, my kids are gone because they're elderly. I mean, that I'm old, and they're, in other words, they're married and so on, and so they moved out, and so they don't live here anymore. It just myself and my wife.
Yeah, well, are you in a, what town are you in?
I'm right next to Des Moines, but I'm in Johnston.
Okay, well, you have an inspection in Johnston.
I never had any inspector or anybody else come by.
He was supposed to get a permit. Okay, he was supposed to get a permit from the city of Johnston to put your roof on.
No, nothing.
Oh,
as far
okay.
as I know,
well,
there's
yeah,
nothing.
That, Okay. Well, I would check with him first. You know, check with the inspector first.
I did it multiple times.
So did he come out and look?
No, not the boss.
Okay.
Just his minions.
No. I mean, there's I'm talking about the city building code official.
No, nobody came. There was nobody. When I called way back when they put it up, they said they were busy. They couldn't come that day. And after that, nobody bothered to come. That was the first and last time I heard of anybody.
Okay. Well, I'd start, first of all, I'd call the state attorney general's office down in Des Moines and, get them involved right now. And I, if it was me, I would get a hold of, find an attorney. This is a case where, somebody may have misrepresented you, but get a hold of that, misrepresented what they were going to do to, for work. Gather all your paperwork, get together with an attorney, in the state attorney general's office, and they may have someone that will, I'd call them first, ask them what to do, and they may have someone that can help you. A group or something and help you so you don't have to get an attorney, but call them first and then call that company and say, I'm getting hold of the state attorney general's office because you're not getting anything taken care of, because they may hear that word. It's always worked really good for me. Whenever I mention that, they kind of their eyes kind of open up a little bit more. So go that route and find out what you can do there. And then, have someone do some research on the company, have them get on, the internet, or you can get on the internet and start pulling up and with a Better Business Bureau, as well, and find out if they have anything on this company. There's no reason at all that, you should have any leaks, let alone multiple leaks. And the more times they climb around up on there, it's just going to make it worse. Because they'll step on the steel around a nail, and it might compress it or wrinkle it. Now that nail will leak or screw, however they attached it on. But it definitely should not have. So there should have been a warranty as well. And you kind of have them on that if it happened within the year. There somebody's going to have to come back and take care of it.
Okay, so you think AJ needs to start with the state attorney general's office and get some assistance with this?
Yep.
All right, AJ, I'm sorry
city officials,
you're going through
and
this.
And then, if the inspection, city inspection, I'd get a copy, just walk in, hey, don't leave. Use your age to an advantage. Walk in, I do. What do I care? I'm old. What are you going to do to me? So I just walk in and say, hey, I'll wait here as long as you want, but I want a copy of that permit. I want to find out. If they didn't have a permit, why? What are you going to do about it? We pay taxes. I get a little bit belligerent sometimes with that. But, hey, you pay taxes. That's what an inspection's for. If you're in the city, they're supposed to be taking care of it. They're supposed to watch out for you, not for the person that did the rotten job. And it makes everybody else look bad, all the good builders and roofers.
All right. Well, and
there might be a roofing association around that area too that might help you out because they want these people out of town.
Well, AJ, I'm so sorry that you have to go through this, and be safe while you pursue this. So I realize you've probably made a lot of phone calls, but maybe start with the phone just so you're protecting yourself too. And good luck. Let's go
take
next.
Plenty of pictures.
Yeah. 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 Let's go next to Victor in Ottumwa. Hi, Victor.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. What's your question?
I have a question. A couple of years ago, we replaced our decking on our porch with composite decking, and I just kind of need to clean it up a little bit and was wondering if you had some advice on what to use.
There's quite a few deck washes at any of the hardware stores or even, paint stores carry them. You'll have to check, though, with the manufacturer. I'd pull up the manufacturer and find out what their cleaning methods are, because some of the washes, I don't know if they use a scientific verbiage for bleach or not, but you look and you don't see bleach, but all of a sudden it does something to the decking. So I would find out which brand you have and find out what their cleaning recommendations are. And we're finding out too that with you know, all this storm damage, people are having a lot of power washing done. And instead of using a little bit more hand scrubbing, they're getting the pressure washing wand way too close to the product they're trying to clean, and they're etching the decking or etching the vinyl siding and taking the surface, a protective surface off. Now, you know, your decking, I would really, find the correct cleaner and then, you know, use a real light pressure and maybe like a wider, like a 25 degree tip on it to spread out that pressured water so it doesn't etch into that. Because I've seen where people have used the too tight of a wand when they're cleaning, you know, too right, I guess, focused of a water
stream. We're
going
to have to take
screen.
Another break here. Victor, thanks a lot for your call. Bill McAnally will be back in a moment. This is Talk of Iowa.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the University of Iowa School of Social Work, offering the opportunity to earn a master's degree from anywhere in Iowa, including an all-online MSW program. Information at socialwork.uiowa.edu.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally, is here today to answer your questions. You can give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Bill, just before the break, you were warning us of the dangers of getting a little crazy with the pressure washer. It can be really tempting just to get really close. That's a very satisfying thing to do, but you can damage whatever you're trying to clean, right?
Yeah, when you're kind of etching your name into it, you know you're too close. And I have a real tendency to do that. You know, I'm kind of the guy, well, if 5 quarts oil in your truck, you know, it's good. I guess 8 quarts would be better, but you know, that just does that kind of mentality doesn't work. So no, you've got to stay way back, especially on that vinyl siding. You got to stay way, way back and scrub more.
All right, let's go back to the
phones. One thing, since I'm not right there with you, the Fine Home Building magazine from February, March of 2019, that's Fine Home Building, mm-hmm. There's really a really good article on proper roofing, how to shingle correctly, what you should be looking at for when they're installing new roof. A lot of pictures. And the proper ways, especially in wind areas of high wind. So it's really a good article for everybody to get a hold of, so they understand how when their roof is being put on, it's the proper way because it's by code.
All right, good advice. Let's get back to the phones. Chris is on the line in Ames. Hi, Chris.
Yes, hi. I have two pretty simple generic questions for you. One, first of all, I am trying to get an almost 100-year-old house ready for sale. And back in 1969, it was very common and chic to put carpeting in your kitchen. And it's only 121 square feet, but it's pretty damaged. And we'd like to pull it up and put down something acceptable for house viewing. So in trying to pull it up, it's really adhered, and I suspect it may just be to old linoleum that was down there before. Is that highly likely, and is there possibly asbestos involved?
There could be. There could be some asbestos involved, but I know exactly what kind of carpet. Does it have a black backing on the carpet? Like, was it glued down to the linoleum?
Yeah.
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 And that stuff, you just can't get that junk off. So.
Spoiler alert, Chris.
Question is, should we try to do it, or do I need to have somebody, in case there is asbestos, do it?
Well, the nice thing about Iowa is you, if it has asbestos in it, you can take care of it. You know, the linoleum. Since it's you personally. Now, if you hire someone, then they have to be a licensed, asbestos mitigation person. So that would be, if you don't want to mess with it, that would be the way to go. But if you keep it damp and you wear basically like, you can get these Tyvek suits, these white overalls and really good.
Are you kidding me? Okay.
No, you don't want to mess with this stuff.
But my question, I guess, is back in 69, 50 years ago, is it likely that what was down and a house that was bought in 56 might have had is likely to have had asbestos in it.
You don't know till you have it tested. Don't know. It is the weirdest thing. You can go into a big room and they test the floor tile, and some of them have it, some of them don't. It is the craziest thing. So if you want to play it safe, take a little small piece of that and find an asbestos person and have them test it. Now, you know, I personally would probably do it myself, but, you know, I've been around that crap so much, you know, it's probably my time anyway. So I would be more likely for you to say, you know, have someone professionally do it.
But it's really ugly and awful. I thought instead of leaving it for the new homeowner, we would try to pull it up easily. And it sounds like it's not an easy thing to do. So maybe we just cover it up with a rug. Okay. Second question. All right.
Or give them an allowance, you know, give them a couple thousand dollars.
But it's really ugly. All right. In 86, Ames did inspections on just about everything. So when you go to the property assessment page, you can pull up the historical card, I guess they call it, and down in the little sliver of space for electrical, it has Romex, breaker, knob, and fuse. And what's checked on that 86 inspection is Romex and breaker. And when I talked to my homeowner's insurance agent, she said it's highly likely then that there is not knob and tube that is currently functioning in the house, because in 69 everything was remodeled. So I'm wondering if that is likely to be the case, or when I talked to one of the big electrical firms here in town, they said they'd have to pull up boards in the attic and there still could be functioning wiring in the walls, et cetera, et cetera. And it could be $30,000. And I went, what do you suggest if the 86 inspection with the city does not have knob checked off and has Romex and breaker checked off? Am I safe or not?
I would, you know, when you, that's, those are legal, you know, a legal question. I would never say that there isn't any knob and tube in there. You know, on those disclosure statements, I've been involved a lot of times where people will kind of stretch the truth a little bit, and I'm not, you know, I would never do that. So you would, you know, on a disclosure statement, I would say, this is exactly what you told me. This is what they said. And the only true way to find out is you're going to have to pull those off and look. Because here's the problem is knob and tube wiring is not supposed to be in contact with any insulation whatsoever. That is the code. That is the law. And we used to cover knob and tube wiring up like crazy because we were always told by industry, don't worry, it doesn't matter. Well, it does. And I've seen so many slides of fires caused by small fires, not the complete house, but where something caught on fire because that knob and tube was insulated by goofballs like us that didn't know better back then. And so it may be hidden somewhere. There may be only a 4-foot stretch of knob and tube left because the electrician couldn't get to it when he remodeled. And so, you know, I would say there's still a possibility there is remaining knob and tube in the structure, you know, because
what my agent said was they only have one carrier that will give the buyer a homeowner's policy that only lasts for 60 days. They have to replace any knob and tube that's in there. Nobody else will do it. We'll give you homeowner's insurance if there is knob and tube. So I am assuming the buyer has to hire an inspector to look, and it might come back on me cost-wise or something like that. But so what you're saying is that 86 inspection card from the city is not absolute.
No, there's no way they went and pulled up every floorboard and looked in some hidden spot where there might only be a couple feet of Romex, because if it's insulated and it's a couple feet and it's hooked up to really good wiring, then it might have a chance of heating up more and causing a fire. And there was no way I would ever say that there isn't any knob and tube unless I personally looked at every stinking inch of that wiring. I would not like to see you get in any kind of legal ramifications.
Do you want to
I wouldn't
say,
be able to sleep at night.
Do you want to say anything encouraging to Chris before we let her go, Bill?
I would just remember, just do what, do what's right. Just do what's right.
Chris, good luck. I'm sorry, there don't seem to be any easy answers there at all.
No. And I know exactly what kind of carpet, because I remember putting that down in the early 70s in kitchens on homes I used to build. Oh my gosh, that stuff was ugly.
My grandparents had it too. All right, here's a question from Twitter from Rachel. I have a leak near a skylight in my kitchen that has a bubble in the drywall holding the water, which keeps getting larger. How do I take care of this? And do I do it from the roof or from the inside?
You're going to have to do it from the roof because the water's getting in from the top. And in a lot of those skylights, they have kind of a little condensation tray that is a little an angle that catches whenever that that moisture on the inside of the skylight, it runs down the glass and ends up in this little tray. The tray may be clogged up. So take a look at the bottom of the skylight and run your fingers up there. You may feel it. Maybe it's clogged with dirt and lint and stuff. And that might be it, but it's probably the roof, and that's what skylights do. I mean, sooner or later, they're going to leak, because everything around them changes. The roof moves and everything. But clean that little trough out first. That may be it. But if it's causing the drywall to bubble, you're going to have to get up in the attic and pull some drywall down, get it fixed, but get that roof fixed first around it and get hold of a roofer that knows how to deal with skylights. And that's kind of a big thing.
All right, let's go to the phones.
I'm sorry.
You can finish your thought there, Bill.
Okay, I was going to say some of the better skylights, the better named skylights, have a very robust rubber gasket system around them, and may have been damaged in a storm.
All right, let's go to the phones. Mark is on the line in Solon. Hi, Mark.
Hello.
Hi.
I have a question on construction of slider doors. I've got a Herd slider door to the deck, and somehow the block that the handles screw in, that's become stripped. So, and I should add that Herd no longer makes this, or I don't even know if they're in business. But I saw where I can get the handles. But the question is, there's evidently a piece of metal inside a slider door that you screw into, and how do I get that block out of the door and replace it?
Boy, that is a really good question. Herd's still in business. They may have changed because there's the H window, and I don't know if they're the exact same company anymore, but I thought they just kind of changed their name over to the H window, but that might just be my mistake. But,
I really don't,
you're going to have to, do you know where it was purchased or?
Well, I don't see, I was up in Marion and I don't see anybody up there anymore.
Okay. Yeah. You're going to have to just Google something on repairs of that particular product. I've been in the same problem on other manufacturers trying to replace something. And usually there's something on YouTube, actually. I hate to say it, but there's usually something on YouTube on replacing that. If not, there are some renovation companies that have the product, your product, and then they may have a replacement panel that you can. I don't know. Boy, I'm just struggling here. Well, what a way to end the morning. You're just going to have to find someone that has that exact same product and like Google issues with Herd sliders or something. But in some cases, you can find another panel too, a whole panel on maybe Facebook Marketplace or something like that, or eBay. But no, I don't have a clue how to get that out of there.
Version of Hail Mary.
It does. You know, you're exactly right. Sometimes we just kind of run into those things, and maybe you can, you know, take off. Is it vinyl clad or steel clad on the inside, or is it all wood?
It's vinyl.
Okay. Now, if it comes down to it, in some cases you can take a heat gun and heat that vinyl and peel it off to get to the inside, and then re-glue that final piece back on.
Okay.
That may work too, but that may be that. I would try that, me personally, but I've screwed up a lot of stuff, so you can join the club.
All right. Well, thank you much.
All right,
yeah,
Mark.
Yeah, I think that was a little sarcastic on that one when you said thank you much. Thanks, Guy. You're a big help.
Sounded sincere to me, Bill. Mark, thank you so much for your call. So the first day of fall is tomorrow, Bill. We've got about 2 minutes left here. This is always, even if you don't have damage on your home, it's a great time to be thinking about some things that we need to do to get ready for the winter months, right?
Yeah, get your heating and cooling system, you know, checked and get it now, because they're really pushing that up here in northern Minnesota right now. And, you know, we're, what, 3 weeks ahead of you or so. So we need to get in there before the big rush, because they're having to deal with all this, you know, issues with the wind. So get them in there and check that. And if you have a fireplace, and you still use it, have someone come in and check it. That, you know, that's a chimney sweep, because sometimes when we get these huge winds like that, it causes some pressure difference issues inside the chimney, and it may have broken some pieces on the dampers. So if you do have a wood burning fireplace or wood stove, and there, you know, have somebody come in there and inspect that that flue, because that's kind of a scary thing we usually don't talk about.
Right. You're so good at bringing up scary things that I haven't even thought about yet.
Yeah. I'm trying to make up for my failure of that answer.
Well, and it's also, we need to change our furnace filters and do some of the basic stuff too, right?
Right. And, you know, get your carbon monoxide detectors and smoke detectors, you know, just replace the batteries. Don't wait for the beep, because the beeper might not be working. Just go ahead and replace the batteries. And if they're more than 10 years old, you know, these small battery ones, I think I'd replace the whole unit. You know, you're trusting your life on something that's just hanging up there and running on batteries. I think I'd, you know, if it's just one of the not hardwired ones, but just the battery powered ones, I'd just put a newer one on.
All right.
Especially the carbon monoxide detector one.
All right. And we've heard so much about carbon monoxide poisoning in the wake of the terrible storm. That's something we're very acutely aware of right now in Iowa. Bill McAnally, thank you so much for your time today.
Well, thanks, Charity.
And enjoy your Minnesota chill up there.
Oh, it was 28 the other day. It was great. It was terrific.
Well, you have fun and you keep it. Bill McAnally, our home improvement expert.
All right.
He'll be back again next month to answer your questions about the home improvement projects in your life. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio. Our producers are Rick Brewer, Dennis Reese, Matt Alvarez, and Caitlin Harrop. You never need to miss an episode of Talk of Iowa. Subscribe to our podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Just search for Talk of Iowa. I'm Charity Nebbie.